Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
It's that time of year again. The night getting longer, the television a little stronger. It's almost time for World's Strongest Man. And today, the World's Strongest Man podcast preview show has much to ponder as we take you yonder to the drama in Botswana, checking out too the worldwide quest to reach the finals, the Giants live tour. Plus, in what is the 40th year of World's Strongest Man, we look through your picks of the best bits, the men, the muscles, the memories of 4 decades of the greatest strength competition in the world. Well, that's quite an introduction, wasn't it? Here I am inside a kind of ordinary audio booth. We're squashed in with big Colin Bryce.
Yeah.
And a very special guest indeed, Eddie the Beast Hall. Eddie.
Hey.
It's him. It's lovely to see you up close and very personal. This is fantastic. Obviously, you're going to be a big part of World's Strongest Man. I don't think it's a spoiler to reveal that. And it's also just great to get a look at the human side of the beast.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right. Colin, I know you're excited about what we've got in store today.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. Yeah. A lot to look forward to. It's been a big year for you, Eddie, because not only have you had Britain's Strongest Man on the Giants Live Tour, the World's Strongest Man competition in Botswana, looking forward to seeing how that goes, but also your first book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have it here, actually. I'm not big on books myself, but this I really enjoyed. Strongman, Eddie the Beast Hall, My Story. And we'll be getting some excerpts later on, because there's plenty of really interesting stuff in here. Eye-opening stuff. Or literally in one case where your eyeball popped out. But more on that later on. One other thing, actually, you've broken into the movie business.
I wouldn't say that, but I'm getting a lot of offers from the movie business at the minute.
But I went to see Transformers, and it's not an experience I would recommend. But the one good bit was, in the opening scene, you turn up.
Yeah, 3 days filming, and it got cut down to about 5 seconds of ooh, ooh, ooh on camera. So,
which
yeah,
you do very
brilliant.
Well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, nailed it.
What happened then? Why did they chop the rest of you out?
I don't know. It's.
I think you do, though.
It was just a big palaver, the whole setup. And
did you fall out with director Michael Bay?
I fell out with everybody, I think, in the end. No, there's no real falling out at all. I just got so agitated with the whole thing. 3 days filming, I went away halfway through, and then they rung me to come back, and it was just a nightmare, nightmare setup.
Was it a low blood sugar thing, Ed?
It was, actually. It was, you know, standing on set for 10 hours.
Right.
No food, no water, just very poorly looked after. Wasn't happy with it.
But you did tell me on day one that every other extra was just, cast! And then Michael Bay would shout, and Beast!
Yeah, that was it. He just kept calling me Beast. Beast, get over here! I'm like, oh, okay, that's a nice way to speak to people.
But that's your nickname.
Yeah, it is.
Traditionally, it would have been Big Eddie. You know, you got Big Tail, Big Loz.
I started it 7 years ago, when I first came onto the UK scene, I used to scream, call myself the Spartan. And, you know, everyone thought, well, what an idiot, he's bad for the sport, et cetera, et cetera. But it caught on, you know, it caught on massively. And then when we went out to Australia, me and Colin met up with Arnold Schwarzenegger and we did a world record deadlift, and Schwarzenegger and Colin were calling me the Beast, and that's when it caught on, the Beast. And the fans got in with it, and hell, I've got it tattooed on my biceps, so there's no going back.
there's plenty you got tattooed on you, actually. There's a great bit in your book, actually, about when you saw a pair of purple loafers standing next to you and realised that possibly your all-time greatest hero, with the exception of Colin Bryce, was standing right next to you.
Yep.
It's a huge year, this, for you, also for World's Strongest Man, 40, and you know, looking better than ever, I would suggest.
Yeah, 40 years of WSM, and there have been some amazing battles over the year. It was a fantastic show. We've had some fantastic rivalries. Lately, Brian Chaucer Junis have won it the last, I think it's 8 years, you know? So, and it's been 24 years since a Briton has won the World's Strongest Man, so hopefully that may change.
I don't know. I can't see that happening.
No? Okay.
Well, we'll talk more about the history of World's Strongest Man, and maybe who you're, because you grew up watching it as a sport on TV, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about your favourite memories and all that kind of thing. As the show progresses, we're going to be hearing more from Eddie. We're going to be getting more from his book. But Colin, there's so much to discuss. By the way, we've got another show coming up after the show has aired. Another podcast coming up after the show is aired on Channel 5. And if you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us at the World Strongest Man website, which is theworldstrongestman.com, our Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter at World Strongest, on Instagram at The World Strongest Man. A lot to remember there. Giants Live. Now, there are 30 places at the World Strongest Man finals, and those are conquered via the Giants Live tour. Colin, you're kind of the factotum, I think that was the expression they used, of this global strength series. Just for anyone who's not really followed the intricacies of it, can you explain it?
I would use the word factotum for someone who kind of carried bags and stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks, mate. Cheers. Yeah, I probably am. That's very true.
But you kind of drive this thing, and it's a growing series.
We must look up that word later. Yes, very much a growing series. Let's get down to business. It's been extraordinary, and I think lashings of hard work, but even greater lashings of good luck in the fact that 40 years of, it's been on telly, and there's a sort of wave of nostalgia, but an even bigger wave of fantastic athletes have all come at the same time.
Right.
So, and that's probably, for a while I've been thinking, we're just going to be lucky for a few years. But actually, it just dawned on me today that for the likes of me that was born before World's Strongest Man began, can you believe it? But, for us, when we first started to grow up and watched it, with Capesy and whatnot in the 80s, it was a bit more, it was a kind of a touch of a shot putter and a power lifter.
It was like superstars, basically.
It was superstars for strength sport, and it was a bit fun. It was, now it's a sport.
Yeah.
A sport has been created out of a television show. Yet the sport is always been there, strength, and it's probably one of the most, innate, natural things. Two young fellas, you're out in the field, there's a big rock, let's lift it, who can lift it? That's been going on since the dawn of time. Why are you smiling, James?
I never had that experience in a field. But Eddie, it's not an easy sport, this, for the athletes, and you're not particularly rewarded for it. I mean, the conditions are not always ideal. It's not been the biggest sport. Have you seen that changing? Is that evolving too?
Yeah, strongman has always been sort of considered somewhat of a pub car park sport in previous years, even though it's been on World's Strongest Man, but you go to a local contest, Staffordshire Strongest Man, England Strongest Man, it's always been on a car park, and it's been very sad to see in previous years. And we've got some fantastic promoters in the UK, Giants Live, around the world, that are making the sport a professional outfit. And that's what's very important at the minute.
Yeah, I think for me, a key moment was when you took it indoors, the first direct arena in Leeds, and you came up with this incredible deadlift world record last year.
Yeah.
And when you walked out in front of that crowd, I know that you were deliberately out there to kind of soak up the atmosphere as it built, but did that feel like a major step forward? And what did that mean to your performance, having that much support there?
Well, massive, you know, and I'm one of those characters, like the wrestling, I thrive on a crowd. The more people there, the better I will perform. And when I stepped out to lift that half a ton deadlift, there were 11,500 to 12,000 people silent. You know, they were anticipating that lift. And with a flick of a finger, the whole crowd erupted and they gave me that adrenaline. They put the hairs on the back of my neck. And that's what made the lift. It was the crowd. And I think that in this aspect of everything, it's such a great thing to have. You know, these feats of strength wouldn't happen if it wasn't for these arena shows, these indoor arena shows. And it is pushing the sport forward massively, especially in this last 5 or so years. The sport has come on hugely. What makes it so big now? Yes, it's the promotions and the promoters, but it's the characters of the sport that are really bringing the sport up to date. You know, WWE was nothing until Andre the Giant came along. And now we've got the likes of Four, we've got the Beast, we've got Brian Shaw, who's known as Gigantor.
Is he now known as Gigantor?
Yeah, yeah. And this is what makes it a family show. This is what makes it entertaining.
Right.
People want to see big, freaky guys move big, freaky weights. Human nature can do nothing but admire power, and that has always been the case since the dawn of time. You can do nothing but admire power, and that's why it's so popular now.
Can I just tell a story that is maybe an urban myth, and if Vince McMahon's listening, he can phone in, of course, Vince, and tell me I'm wrong. But supposedly, because Vince McMahon's dad was, who started the WWF, as it was, but obviously, he took it to WrestleMania heights in 1980, 81, and it was, you know, and of course, it's a multi-billion-dollar business now. And when someone asked him, how did you, you know, take it from, you know, the end of peer type wrestling your dad did to the billion-dollar industry? His answer, he didn't sort of say how smart he was or marketing tactics. He just said, Andre the Giant, one freak fills an arena. That's it. And get the biggest, baddest freak of all. People just want to see him. And there you go. So, I mean, you know, I think we've, right now, Eddie's obviously looking massive here next to you and I. But compared to Brian and Brian. Thor, he's, you know, you're the sort of stunted one, aren't you?
I'm sort of, I mean, I'm 6 foot three. I'm probably classed as one of the shortest in the final.
What's Brian?
Brian is six foot eight.
And Hapthor?
6 foot ten.
Wow.
You know, right. I'm competing in the world of giants, and they are coming out the woodwork more and more.
Well, we've got a full field of, you know, if I may, with respect, freaks coming up. 5 qualifiers in the run-up to the World's Strongest Man Finals in Botswana. It's the Giants Live Tour. It all starts, Colin, in Sweden, in Norrköping. What can people expect and look forward to in the what was the Scandinavian Open, really?
It's a big battle, that's for sure. You know, you got Mark Felix, Terry Hollins, Will Baggett, who's from Southampton, new guy coming through as well, who qualified.
And an old guy, Big Z.
A Big Z, absolutely.
And wait till you see what he looks like.
Looking lean and mean, all abbed up, if you can believe it. He's gone a bit Hollywood. It's going to be interesting to see if he's still got the power. But he wants to do it, so we're always happy to have a Big Z there. And then there's Johannes Arsho, who has, in the last previous two contests in Sweden, taken on Brian Shaw and Hapthor Bjornsson. And with both of them, he's led at the halfway point and then somehow just managed to lose right at the end. So for him, it would be massive if he could win in front of his home crowd.
With all of these Giants Live events, 3 places available for the finals in Botswana. After Sweden, we're back to Britain for Britain's Strongest Man, which is your event, Eddie, and you're back there this year.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, excellent. Also features this year 2 brothers going head-to-head in the super yoke, the Stoltmans.
The Williams sisters of Strongman. Stoltman versus Stoltman.
Yes.
Something like that. Successful. The two best in Scotland, that's for sure. 6 foot 8, and the older brother, who is Scotland's strongest man, gets the getaway, but goes down.
Well, slow and steady from Tom at the top.
Oh, older brother's coming back again. He goes down again.
Just too eager, and look at that, the younger brother. 14.87 seconds, and you know that his big brother is delighted for him, yet frustrated.
So the Stoltmans, Eddie, there's quite a generation of strong men coming through in Britain at the moment. You talked about worldwide, but Britain at the moment, with some really interesting characters. And Luke, talking about his younger but bigger brother, Tom, predicting that he's a future world champion. Is that realistic?
Yeah, I mean, Tom has got the tools. He is, I dare say, is he 7 foot, 6 foot 11? He's huge, and he's got the levers, he's got the muscle mass, and he's very young. I think he's 21, 22. You know, I wasn't that big at that age, and I probably wasn't that strong at that age. So this guy has got some massive potential. If he gets his head down, gets a good team around him, he could win the world's strongest man. There's no doubt in my mind.
Wow, Tom Stoltman. What's the peak age for a strongman then?
In my opinion, the peak age for strongman is early 30s, mid to early 30s. Going on past winners, that's probably where everyone's won the most world's strongest man titles. And, you know, reading up on strength sports and swimming, they all tend to peak 30 plus.
Right. How old are you then?
29.
Interesting.
2 more years till his peak.
For reasons of kind of the physical build-up of muscle mass, but also because of the experience you get of learning how to approach these events, because this is, I mean, it's kind of the Wild West strongman, isn't it? There's no laws, there's no guidebooks, there's nothing out there. You just make your own way.
Yeah. I mean, I started strongman when I was 19. I've never had a coach. I've never had anybody show me how to use a yoke or a log.
What's the biggest mistake you ever made then?
I've made loads. I made hundreds of mistakes. Mainly training wrong. You know, when I first started out as a strongman, I just trained as a bodybuilder. I wouldn't train strongman events. And I just got in my head, I needed to be strong. I don't need to practice with the kit. I don't need to lift out the stones and run with yokes. I just need to be strong. And that was the biggest mistake I made. I didn't even started training strongman until my first World Strongest Man appearance. And then I started training strongman. So that was my biggest mistake.
If anyone listening is thinking of getting it or is already on that road, what's the biggest advice you would give them?
My biggest advice would be, you know, I started strongman when I was 19 years old. I'm 29 now. My best advice would be to train strongman events.
Right. Go do tennis.
Yeah. You know, I spent the first 5 years of my career just doing bodybuilding, just getting big and strong. And it wasn't until my first World Strongest Man appearance at 24 I actually started training strongman. So that was my biggest mistake, I feel.
So, for example, a truck pull, you'd never pulled a truck before you were in World Strongest Man pulling it?
Other than actually doing it in a contest, I'd never did a single bit of strongman training.
Right. And that's one of the issues. You know, a keg toss, where are you going to train that unless you've got, or a truck?
Yeah, that was half the problem. We didn't have the harnesses, we didn't have the kegs, we didn't have any of the equipment available where I lived. You know, you'd have to travel 2 or 3 hours to go and train these things, and it just wasn't viable within my schedules.
Is that changing at all now with the wave of strongmen coming through?
100%, especially the last 5-6 years. Nearly every gym's got a log, a yoke, a farmer's walk, Atlas stones. You could go to pretty much any gym now and train log and yoke and stuff. So it's definitely becoming more of a household sport. I've even heard of schools teaching strongman now.
Really?
Yeah, in this last 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
Which is a big step.
Apart from the Stoltmans then, Adam Bishop made a huge leap forward a couple of years back. He's had a lot of injury problems since then. Any other names you'd want to pick out?
In the UK? Mm-hmm. It's very tough. It's very tough to sort of pick them out. Other than Tom Stoltman, I couldn't see anyone at this point who's got a chance of becoming WSM.
I mean, if I was to say somebody, I would probably say, thing is, part-time training, part-time results. Full-time training, full-time results.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the perfect example. A man who was, you know, just making the final World's Strongest Man, suddenly he made the full commitment, and it's a gamble. It's a huge gamble because, you know, it's a sport you can get injured at very quickly. So to give your job up is a dangerous thing. But actually, Luke Stoltman, he's incredibly athletic, big brother or little brother, older brother. I mean, he has all the tools. He also has the sort of charm, charisma and whatnot and the intelligence to be able to train himself up. But he's on the rigs half the year. He can't do any training half a year.
He works on oil rigs. So how does that work?
Well, you work 12-hour, you know, shifts as a roughneck, and then you know, maybe do a few dumbbells because that's all you've got.
So what proportion of even the 30 that we see at the finals, what proportion of them would be pro?
God's honest, probably only the top three.
Wow.
And that's the truth. The other guys would have to I suppose what your class is pro, but some of the guys will just live off strongman. They will compete every single week in Champions Leagues, etc., earning a, you know.
How many hours of training are we talking, Eddie?
Oh, geez. 20-plus hours a week, minimum.
Recovery, though. Recovery's the thing.
The recovery is where I changed the A game. Is, you know, I set myself up a hyperbaric chamber. I got hot and cold tubs. I purchased shockwave machines. got my own sauna, steam room in the garden. I was spending 250 quid a week on physio. It was just, I took it to the next level. Right. The recovery was more important than the training. I realised that.
Well, you can read more about Eddie's extraordinary lifestyle as a strongman in the very excellent Strongman Eddie the Beast Hall, My Story. Let's get a little excerpt now, in fact, about one of the more unusual bits of training that you did. Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Hall.
One of my parents' many attempts at giving me an interest other than roughhousing and inflicting injury was offering me piano lessons when I was 9. I don't mind admitting that, but I was horrified when they first suggested it. I was a miniature thug, for Christ's sake, whose hobbies included smashing bottles over people's heads and using four-letter words beginning with F and C. I couldn't think of anything more diametrically opposed to what I enjoyed doing than learning a flaming instrument, which was probably the reason Mum and Dad tried to get me into it. Piano lessons. I could have died.
I mean, it's a tremendous development tool, that, for the mind, isn't it, piano?
Yeah.
Can you do green sleeves?
Can you still play?
No, I can't. But when I was a very young boy, I was obsessed with the Beatles and John Lennon and Paul McCartney, and they were big piano players. Right. And that was sort of something I wanted to replicate. You know, I love that, you know, really admired the Beatles. I wanted to try and be one of those.
What was your favourite Beatles song? What is your favourite Beatles song?
Oh, it's a tough one. Probably Eleanor Rigby.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to go for Carry That Weight off Abbey Road.
maybe. There's quite a few. You know, and I like John Lennon's sort of singles. Yes, Imagine those sort of things. You know,
Number 9 Dream.
Paul McCartney's Yesterday. It's just those sort of just captivated me.
Yeah.
Really captivated me.
More from Strongman, the Eddie Hall story later on. But also coming up in the tremendous Giants Live series, of course, is Europe's Strongest Man, ranking only behind World's Strongest Man in prestige, perhaps. And it's one of the titles you've never won, Eddie.
No, never have.
Why is that?
No. It's always been attached to the World Deadlift Championships, especially the last few years. And obviously pulling huge deadlifts, it takes too much out of you. And obviously, as you know, the 500 kilo was something that nearly killed me. And there's no way on this earth I was going to carry on and do a contest after that. No chance.
You're not kidding, though. I remember watching, and Colin bravely tries to interview you afterwards, but there's no way you're speaking. You have blood coming out of you all over.
Oh, God. Yeah, there was blood coming out of my eyes, my nose, my ears. Went backstage. I lost my sight. The medical team was on me very heavily.
For how long?
I lost my sight for about 3 days. They call it arc eye, where you see a black spot in the middle of your eye.
Uh-huh.
I had that.
Why? Because you just pushed your body beyond a
tipping
point.
Yeah, it felt like I had concussion. You know, I'd just wake up at home and, you know, be like, where am I? You know, my wife, well, you've been sitting watching TV for 3 hours. I'd be like, geez. You know, it got to the point where it was like I had done some serious damage to my body and my brain more than anything. Well, I felt really bad.
The thing is, Ed didn't just deadlift 500 kilos, which is ludicrous in itself. I can remember the first time I did a deadlift hold. And I remember picking the back end of this car up, and it was about probably only about 230 kilos or something. But after about 10 seconds, this wash of endorphins comes over your body. So it's a very strange feeling, and I was sitting there chewing my tongue, happy as anything. And Eddie got in front of all those people. You can sort of see it in his eyes. There was a sort of berserker come endorphin rush, and he wouldn't let the bar go down.
Well, also,
he must have held it
happened
for six, seven, 8 seconds.
In total,
was part of that because of what happened when you were doing the world record at Headingley, and you did let the bar go?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was a point to be made, and also enjoying the moment, savouring the moment. You know, I completed that lift. I saw the referee give me the down single the second I locked it out, and I thought, hell, I'm going to stand here and enjoy this moment for a few seconds. And that's what probably caused me the issues. Had I just put it down as soon as the referee gave me the down signal, I'd have probably been okay.
Well, it was an extraordinary moment. That was in last year's Europe's. This year's coming up features Hapthor, who came into the competition suffering from Bell's palsy, which has a physical effect on his face. How does it affect him in terms of the competition?
In terms of the competition, the actual physical attributes probably didn't affect him at all, but mentally, that would have been very tough. I mean, if it was me, you're looking in the mirror and half my face was drooping down, I'd have pulled out. I wouldn't have risked it.
Right.
But fair play to Four. You know, he's got some big gonads. He went ahead. He did that comp with a droopy face. Fair enough.
And you got involved in a real battle with him, indeed, on the car walk.
And look at this. Neck and neck so far.
Bjornsson in the black car, perhaps just ahead, but Eddie Hall starting to pull away.
Well, look at this from Eddie Hall. What a finish. 12.51 seconds. Eddie Hall takes the car walk.
Eddie, you took that. We won't reveal what happens in the competition overall, but great sportsmanship between you two.
Yeah, 100%. Me and Four had a fierce battle. Absolutely. For probably one of the most fierce battles in history. It was just me and him. No one else was even in contention. But yeah, the thing is, I came into that competition feeling so confident that I was going to win it. And then I turned up and Four must have packed on about 10 kilos of solid muscle. He looked phenomenal. He looked so strong. And I think it was the first event was the truck pulling. He was the only one to finish it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was really worried at that point. And I thought, geez, all this effort. And, you know, I thought I was going to walk away with the Europe's title. And Four just turned up a different animal, completely different animal.
We'll see what happens soon enough on Channel 5. Now, straight after the Europe's, but a very different beast in terms of an event, is the North American Open, all the way from Martinsville, Indiana, which is one of your favourite venues. Is that right, Conor Bryce?
Yeehaw! Yeah, it is, actually, yeah. It's
gets a different field, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, obviously it gets the North American guys, and there's a wave of interesting new fellas coming through. So, it's an open contest, though, so there's Brits at it as well.
You got Nick Best there. You got the Hatch brothers, who I wasn't familiar with before.
Bonkers.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay. You've got Rob Kearney, who we'll talk more about a little bit later on. You've also got Ian Beebe, who really catches the eye. And again, didn't know a lot about Ian previously. So let's find out a little bit more about the Burkina Faso-born Canadian athlete.
And known as Ian Beebe. Originally from West Africa, Burkina Faso. I got 25-inch biceps. I can't even reach it. My chest is about 63-inch. And right now I weigh about 170 kilograms. I moved to Canada in 2009 for school, and that's where I learned about lifting. So today I'm happy to represent Canada. It's a pleasure and it's an honor.
Iron Bibby.
And what do his biceps measure, Colin?
25 and a half inches, which is about, 30 centimetres. So if you're in centimetres, 24 would be 60, so 65 centimetres.
That's a lot of centimetres. Eddie, how big are your biceps?
I think mine are just shy of 25, thereabouts. So
they're
big arms.
They're in that ballpark. Yeah.
It was Eddie, actually, who first put me onto him. He said, Colin, you have to see this guy. He's unbelievable. And the more I meet Iron Bibby, the more I realize this guy's got more than the X factor. This guy is unique, totally unique. I mean, you heard the music there, the songs and the dancing. I'd never met the man, and I said, "Would you?" I didn't want to sort of you know insult him. I said, "Well, could you do some cool training stuff in Burkina Faso?" Imagining a gritty training stuff that you might be able to do, and I said, "Maybe you could get some kids kind of jogging after you, your brother, your sister, a little rocky stuff." No kidding, he left this little USB stick in the hotel. Didn't even say anything about it. Picked it up, put it in my computer about a week later, and there was 1-2,000 people chasing him, screaming Iron Bibby, all with Iron Bibby fan club t-shirts on.
Wow.
Guys with donkeys, everything. And he just rode around in the back of this giant flatbed bench pressing.
Right.
And they just went nuts. It made Muhammad Ali's Ali Bumbaye look like a small gathering. It was insane.
Right. Can't wait to see him make the World's Strongest Man finals. Will he qualify from the North American Open? We'll find out. Eddie, you flagged this guy up to Colin. Where did you come across him?
I can't quite remember. I remember coming across Iron Bibby on social media, and then I met him in person at a strongman event.
It's
just phenomenal, you know, not just his strength attributes, his charisma. absolutely amazing. He could, you know, he could do backflips, he could do somersaults.
Wow.
And the guy's like 28, 29 stone. And he's strong, and that's important. Charisma with strength is a powerful tool. They come hand in hand.
You know, he took the mic off of Neil Pickup at a contest in Manchester, and it was as if you were listening to a statesman. He just took the mic off him and then just addressed everybody, thanked everybody. It was just immense. It was perfectly, you know, you couldn't have written it better.
Manchester, of course, the venue for the final stop on the Giants Live series this year.
The World Tour Final, baby.
Right. Oh, yeah. As athletes try and book the last three places at the World's Strongest Man Finals. We'll hear about that shortly. First of all, though, speaking of books, let's get another little bit from Strongman.
While we were there, we went on safari and saw elephants, lions and giraffes in the wild. But the highlight for me actually happened at the zoo. We were in the reptile house and one of the keepers told me to cut my hands and hold them out. Then he handed me an egg. Be very careful with it, he said. If you keep it warm, it might hatch. What's inside? I asked. It's a crocodile, he said. And within about 30 seconds, I had a newborn crocodile lying in the palm of my hand. Things like that don't happen in Stoke, although I did have a dead rat thrown at me once.
A true story, Eddie. What happened to the guy who threw the rat at you?
A very young, obviously a very rough estate. I think we were playing in a swamp or something, and an older kid threw a rat at me, hit me square in the face. And
wow.
Because he was quite a bit bigger, I just let it slide. But I'll never forget it because I remember... you know.
Where he lives.
Yeah.
He's probably moved by now, I should think.
He better do.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, Giants Live World Tour Finals. Colin, you're just saying there's never been a bigger event.
It doesn't get any better.
Really?
The Olympics, forget it.
Okay.
World Tour Finals.
All right. And you can see it all in 1 hour on Channel 5. Magnificent event. I mean, putting it together, Colin, the logistics, because you've really taken Giants Live up several notches with this.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple concept. People keep asking, you know, I mean, World's Strongest Man is a different beast. It's a sort of epic filming. You know, it's a bit of a Cecil B. DeMille movie. You know, you have so many guys coming in and they have to wheedle them down for the grand final. And that takes time. And it often takes exotic locations that are, you know, willing to help fund such a massive project. So it's more like a movie. And that sort of, well, you know, couldn't we just have the World's Strongest Man in a day, so in a fast show? So that was the idea. You know, let's just offer up the top 10 a chance to come and win really big prize money. You know, if one drops out, then we go to the 11th best guy in the world, in our opinion. And we had quite a lineup of guys, you know, including Zydrunas Savickas.
Right.
Fully powered up again.
Yeah. So what he's done with his weight over the last year has been really, really interesting. We'll see him there, the four-time World's Strongest Man champion. Eddie, you're there. And also, there was the return of a good friend of yours.
Last time I was here, they hated me, but I loved it.
You guys can boo or you can cheer, but I'm having a blast, so.
I've competed in Britain several times. I love coming out here and competing. The fans are idiots, but they get into the show. So, I mean, I'll fly to the country just to put on a show for them.
How are you enjoying here in Britain anyway?
Oh, it's good, except for the people, the food, and the weather.
Yeah, we love your perm as well, buddy.
Robert Oberst is over from America, the big loudmouth. And, you know, I'm sick to death of that guy talking about my mom and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm just taking it in my stride. I'm just going to let the work show what's possible, you know.
I think Eddie will be lucky if he does the deadlift all right and doesn't have a heart attack. Dude's 4 feet tall and 5 foot wide.
I'm coming in fast and coming in hard. So, Obi, zip it, shut up, go back across the pond. See you later, dude.
You got a message for the fans this year.
I can't speak slow enough for them to understand, so just come out and watch the show.
Well, the sport wants personalities. It's got one in Robert Oberst, Obi.
Obese.
Obese. I can't remember whether it's his grandfather, his great-grandfather supposedly was a circus strongman, and he's very much got that look. How much of the rivalry between you and him is showmanship?
Not that much.
Really?
You know, I generally don't like him. Yeah, he's a...
There is such a brotherhood between strongmen, but not between you and Robert Oberst.
No, no. Me and Obi will be the ones, you know, where we do the meetings, we're throwing rotten eggs at each other, putting post-it notes on a back saying, you know, kick me up the backside or whatever.
Who started it?
Can't quite remember. I think it's just the general hatred we have for each other. I think it was a mutual beginning, really. No one started it.
Probably it was coming into the log challenge, log challenge in 2014. I think probably really kicked it off when obviously Robert did a massive log in training and then said, look, see you there, Eddie. Kind of thing. I'm coming to your hometown or your home,
yeah,
wherever, in Doncaster,
yeah.
and suddenly Eddie replied it with double the abuse, yeah. And then it just escalated. And in the end, he started abusing everyone from Stoke, and then people from Stoke started abusing him, and it got a bit nasty. Really, he was worried he was going to get bottled when he came out.
The feud quite literally stoked. Then,
yes.
Well, we'll see the results. In the Giants Live World Tour Finals, which is the final show of the Giants Live series before the World's Strongest Man Finals arrive on Channel 5. Watch every show. It's unmissable stuff. Remember, we've got another podcast coming up in a month's time when everything has aired and the dust has settled. We'll be discussing what happens in Botswana. We'll be talking to the winner and much, much more. We'd also love to hear from you. Remember, you can get in touch with us. There's the worldstrongestman.com website. There's the Facebook page. On Twitter, it's at worldstrongest. On Instagram, at theworldstrongestman. Now, as I mentioned earlier on, World Strongest Man celebrates a milestone birthday this year, the Big 4-0. And before we discuss the good, the bad and the ugly from the last four decades, I'm looking at you, Colin, here's a little reminder of some of the classic moments in WSM history.
Poundstone has it and he drops it. It's Pujanowski winning the title yet again.
Magnus, in fact, now in the lead at the third. This is real drama. It's Magnus and the time is fast. This one is for the title. 29 seconds. Herbal Kiri and the rest are beaten. This is real emotion for Magnus Van Magnussen.
Go on his legs, right here. You decide.
And it's Kasmar who psyched out Capes. Capes seems to have given up. Kasmar, the winner.
Oh, the Eskimo, I'm a Viking.
I'm going to the finals. I will be world strongest man one day. I will win it for America. I'll keep coming back. I'll keep winning.
These last two pots. Look at the timekeeper. Has he done it?
The king is not dead!
Yes! Would you believe it?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, Colin. So many. Eddie, who's your all-time favourite strongman?
It's a very tough one. For me personally, it's got to be Kasmaier.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
He just reminds me of me so much. Just pure brute power, just no-nonsense attitude.
Yeah.
The strongest man on the planet. That's when I want to be.
Right. Three titles, should have had more, could have had more.
And 30 years ago, visited Stoke. Sorry, I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah.
Only kidding.
All right, well, we've asked people, around the world for their favourite memories. We've got a bunch of suggestions here. Roger Thomason from Sweden saluting Magnus Samuelsson's win in 1998 in Morocco. He says at the start of the programme, he says, I don't care what other guys say or think. I'm here for one reason only, and that is to win it. And he did, Colin.
Yeah. I actually preferred his quote at the end of the TV show when he said something that really sat with me, which is to something his father had told him. And he said, to win a world championship in any sport, you can be proud. So that was, he felt he'd achieved what his father had set out to do in different sports.
Yeah, so very true. Jimmy Pollock, we all remember with so much love. Mark Spite from Kingston upon Hull says he remembers the boulder lifting event when Jimmy had a contestant drop a boulder on his ankle. His reaction was priceless.
Absolutely. Luckily, it didn't hit his Pollock, eh?
Nicely done. Here's one from Chile. Francisco Zabalango says, arm wrestling between Nathan Jones and Magnus Samuelsson. Quite a few people, actually, nominating this one. I doubt it's Nathan Jones's favourite memory, though.
Yeah, big Nathan. I mean, it's one of those ones where we all learned that actually brute strength, you know, does not beat technique. And that was the greatest example of it ever.
John Pettijohn says when Franco Colombo broke his leg under the fridge. That was horrible to watch.
Yes.
Claire Joanne, so many memories. I've been watching it since I was three with my dad. Loved Samuelsson arm wrestling. Jamie Reeves winning. And Manfred Herbel was so sad when he was injured and couldn't compete the next year. Manfred Herbel, Colin.
The arms, the guns. What was it? What was his book again? I had at least two copies of it. 10 minutes to big arms. Yeah, 26,
really?
26-inch arms.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Brett Lindsay, originally from New Zealand, Friday nights in New Zealand, watching Mobile Sport on Channel 3, sitting wide-eyed, watching Magnus von Magnussen winning. David Johnson in Belfast. Always remember O.D. Wilson losing out to John Paul Sigmundsen. O.D. Wilson, the greatest man never to win.
I would have to have a bit, but of course, poor O.D. had, you know, his things, his life ended early. I mean, that was a tough last event for him. He was so far in the lead, but basically it was a fitness event, running with bricks. So poor old OD.
Yeah. Rachel Dennis, I remember watching my first World's Strongest Man at Christmas with my family. I was about 7 or 8. I think that's how most of us started. Yoko Ohola winning his second title. So it'd be 1999. I was hooked after that, and he's still my favourite winner. Matt Jones says he's watched them all again earlier this year, and the thing that struck him was how good Gerrit Badenhorst was.
Well, what strikes me is how much time has he got in his hands? There's a lot of telly to watch in 4 years.
But, you know, great viewing.
Yes, thank you for watching.
Yeah. Steve Palmer, it's a tradition with no doubt. Continues today with me watching with my daughter who completely loves it too.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Well, so much love there for the Magnuses. Magnus Vermagnussen, who, of course, has managed to stay in the strongman world as a judge and official, but also as a quite brilliant TV presenter with us on the Channel 5 coverage. And oh my word, he joins us now on the line. Magnus, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Ah, he's actually there. Magnus, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you guys?
Well, we're very well. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm just moving from my car into my gym and into the office.
That's exciting.
Doesn't sound like it.
So you might have some wind blowing.
Right. How's the weather in Iceland, Magnus?
It's absolutely freezing right now.
Okay, good to know. Good to know.
Not a good time to take a trip over here, I can tell you that.
Okay. Listen, we were asking people for their favourite memories, and so many people nominated you. I mean, the four titles. Which was your favourite of all your World's Strongest Man exploits?
Well, my favourite one, actually, and my hardest one, was my second win in Sun City, when I had the final with the Stones against Manfred Herbel.
Because you'd won in, when was it, 91? And then I think everyone thought you were just going to walk the next two, but you didn't. You came second. How much pressure were you feeling then when it came to 94?
Well, it all came down to, in 92, I messed up. And that was actually held in Iceland. And I messed up. Well, we all go through our careers, and we sometimes make mistakes. And one of the things that good strongman needs to do is make no mistakes. But we always have that one that we missed, or that one decision we done wrong, or something like that. Now, that's the one that always haunts me. So I made a mistake with the Hosefold Stone, which costed me the title that year.
You dropped the stone, Magnus. What actually happened that day?
Well, it was between, basically, at that time, between me, Jamie Reeves, and Ted van den Parra from Holland. And it came down to the stone, the Akari of the Husafor stone, and I did the mistake. The stone felt light, so I picked it up too high and tried to grab it low. And when I started walking, I realized I had it too high on my chest. It was stopping my breathing, and I couldn't see where I was going. So I stopped, and I was going to slide it down a little bit, and I dropped it.
Wow. In front of your home crowd, with the title right there before you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Rub it in, James.
it sounds like it's still quite a vivid memory. And then 93, you were second again in 93, yeah? So when you...
Yeah, in 93, that was the year my mentor and friend, Johan Bo Sigmarsson, passed away.
Mm.
And my head was not in the game. I wasn't ready for the show, and my head just wasn't in the game. But when I realized that when I came second, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. If I would have come in shape here, I would have won it. So I went back, worked my ass off, and then came back and winning 3 years in a row. And, you know, what stopped me basically was in 97, I was carrying an injury. And I just couldn't perform how I liked. And I didn't come back for World Strongest Man after that.
Right.
You know, the one thing I always remember about you, Magnus, was first meeting you as World Strongest Man, and you didn't look like a lot of the other guys who were overly bulked up. You know, in a leather jacket, you just looked like a big athlete, and that always sort of stuck with me. That actually, useful muscles is what you need, not necessarily massive pumped up muscles. Though nowadays, of course, Magnus, I think it's fair to say you need to be huge, don't you?
Well, the game has changed. That had to do with my training. You see a lot of these Olympic lifters; they're not, you know, really huge, but they can do unbelievable things. And I always trained to be stronger and faster. I didn't care about, you know, getting heavier. Actually, you know, tell you the truth, I really had problem putting on weight. It didn't matter what I ate. I struggled putting on weight. I was burning so much calories that I really struggled with it.
We've got Eddie Hall here, Magnus, ahead of the finals this year, who I think represents a different breed then, physically, of strongman.
Oh, yeah. You know, these guys today are just monsters.
You're a monster, Eddie.
Thanks, yeah, Magnus. That's nice to know.
He's a beast.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to see how he gets on in Botswana. You were watching when Magnus retook the title in 94, probably, although you'd have been pretty young, actually, when he won it the first time.
Yeah, I'd have been 6 years old.
All right, that
when
is
he won
you.
It in 94,
although
yeah.
You were a precocious child, Eddie.
Yeah, that's it. One thing I remember with Magnus, I think it's 2000, one of my first World Strongest Man, is, you know, and I'm standing there with the giants, you know, the 6'9", 6'10", 440-pound monsters. And one thing that stuck with me from a conversation with Magnus was he wasn't he didn't have the genetic tools that a lot of the other guys had. You know, he didn't have the body weight. But one thing he did say to me that stuck with me since was that he trained harder than everybody else. And that's all he did different. He didn't have the tools. He didn't have any genetic, you know, freak stature. Hmm. He just trained harder than everybody else. And I took away from that. And me, myself, I know I can say I train harder than anybody else coming into all my shows.
There you go, Magnus.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I picked up on my, you know, how to train and that, from a guy that when I was starting in powerlifting, I got told, oh, he's training all wrong. Well, he proved everybody wrong. That was Johan Bo Sigmarsson.
Well, you had a big hand in shaping Eddie's direction then, and of course in Hapthor Bjornsson's as well. The day that a lanky Icelander walked into your gym and you said, well, maybe you should give up basketball and try hand at strength athletics.
Yeah, pretty much. I actually ran into Hapthor in a gym. It was before I opened mine, and I saw this, you know, tall guy, you know, with a lot of potential of possibly doing good in strongman. So I asked him, you know, would you come along? Would you try this sport? And he calls me a night before a contest, enters it, and I think he came third or fourth in his first ever, you know, ever contest, which was really good by winning the first event, which was a stone cutty.
Magnus, amazing. And we're still waiting to see him fully realise his potential, I think. Just to finish off, and we're looking forward to seeing you in Botswana on Channel 5's coverage this Christmas, but not necessarily from your own wins, but what's your favourite memory out of the last 40 years of World's Strongest Man?
Well, there's a lot to choose from. There is all the good memories. There's all the victories. There's all the achievements. And there is always the downfalls as well.
Mm.
Something that you think you could have done better. But, you know, overall, I still say the sweetest memory was, and the sweetest win was in Stone City against Mumford.
Right, 1994. Magnus, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you in Botswana.
Train hard, buddy.
Good luck to Eddie.
Jack of all Jim. Go Magnus. There.
See you, dude.
All right, see you there.
Whoa, memory lane, Eddie. If you could be in a time machine, it would have to be obviously quite a big one, but if you could fit into a time machine and go back, which era would you like to land in? Which era of World's Strongest Man would you like to compete in? Against Kaz, perhaps?
I think so. Hmm? I think, yeah, prime Eddie Hall against a prime Kaz would be a very interesting watch.
Colin, I'm going to you. Who would win?
Well, I mean, it's a bit unfair. It's a bit like saying, you know, Usain Bolt up against Jesse
it's
Owens.
It's a question I'm asking.
So, okay. We'd have to strip away all events and just go straight to bench press. Who can bench the most?
Yep.
It would be a very upper body contest.
Right.
I mean...
Well, Kaz with those tremendous legs as well, though.
Yes. It has to be the Kaz Mundo, of course. Really? I couldn't dare say anything
well,
against Kaz.
Well, he's won three World's Strongest Man titles, and Eddie hasn't won any
he
yet.
He would have won everyone if he was allowed to have competed at them. Okay. You know, he's a demigod.
Let me ask you this then, Eddie. Which event, which test of strength would you like to see reincorporated in the World's Strongest Man playbook? Is there one thing that you'd like to see?
For sure.
Tug of war?
The wrestling events.
Oh, the wrestling. Yeah.
You know, as dangerous as they are. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the human freak shows attack. Literally, the Clash of the Titans. It is something I'd love to see again. You know, a 440-pound Brian Shaw smashing into a 440-pound four. Hmm. I'd love to see that. Who could knock each other down?
Do you know, Joe Rogan was talking in his podcast about how much he loves seeing Hapthor going head-to-head with Conor McGregor. And he's desperate for giants boxing. Hmm. Of course, giants live. My brain started thinking here. Man, but would you fancy a bit of that?
Hey, yeah. It'd be out of my own personal interest. I would love to go in a ring with Thor O'Brien and battle it out, because I think it'd be fantastic entertainment.
Well, remember Kaz in the sumo wrestling. God, yep. The guys go crazy.
Speaking of Kaz,
mind over matter. It's right here, right now.
Thanks, Kaz. Bill Kazma. Right, excellent. Well, what's to stop wrestling coming back, Colin?
Just the fact that there's probably a guaranteed 30% injury rate.
Right.
You have to be a lunatic like Eddie to really want it. A lot of the guys are not maybe as hard as Eddie in terms of used to physical contact. Uh-huh. It is, you know, it would be taking right out of their comfort zone. But personally, I'd quite like to do it just as an aside. I might just start promoting Eddie in a 1 minute round of brawling.
Right.
Maybe challenge Thor. Fancy that?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay. I'd love to.
Well, of course, Eddie and Hapthor will be going head to head, along with a lot of other great strongmen, the world's best, in the finals in Botswana on your TVs at Christmas. We're going to preview the action, the athletes, and all that kind of thing in Gaborone very, very shortly, just to take us there. Eddie, will you give us one more little excerpt from your book?
Of course I will.
Right. Well, there's a passage here involving you after a swimming gala back when you were probably the best swimmer in the country.
When my name was eventually called out, I slowly and provocatively undid the bathrobe to reveal that I was wearing Becky Dulson's swimsuit. Becky was a teammate of mine, and because she had a spare swimsuit, I had asked if I could borrow it. The entire place erupted when I finally took off the bathrobe, but I don't think anybody was particularly surprised. I was famous for pulling stunts like that, and I think that, like Mum, they were just relieved I wasn't naked. There's an ambition of mine, though. If you ever see me at a strongman event dressed in a bathrobe, run like.
That's good advice, Eddie. I must say, today you're wearing a really fetching Superman kind of skin tight thing. You carry it well. Are there any pictures of you in Becky's swimsuit?
Can we not in
them?
The book. We could get some.
Another time. Because right now we've got to talk about the World's Strongest Man finals in Botswana.
Yeah.
Wow. Every year we say it's going to be the best finals ever, and it never fails to live up to that.
This one's outrageous.
Why is it outrageous, Colin?
You've got 2 four-time winners coming together. For 8 years, they've dominated the scene. You've got the mighty Hapthor Bjornsson, who should have won on several occasions. He's easily the most decorated man to have never won the title, and he's trying harder than ever before, having... done so well this season, put even more weight on. And then there's the outsider, some chippy Brit from Stoke who went and deadlifted more than anyone else has done ever. I mean, the most simple exercise. It's been done millions of times and the world record's been recorded since the 19th century. And, he becomes the fourth man and maybe more. There's, of course, Lysis and Charlet and all these great characters as well.
Janashia.
Yeah. Love that guy.
Crop of athletes who came through last year who really shook up, I think, a lot of people's expectations. Second time in a row that we'll be in Botswana, this time in the capital, Gaborone. First time we've ever seen one of the events, and it's a deciding event in the group stages. Last man standing. Eddie, what do you know about this? What do you feel about this?
Last man standing, it was basically you do the heats, and dependent on points, you go out in a certain order and basically put a stone over a bar. Sixth place goes against fifth. Keep going until one drops out. Then fourth place comes in. Then third place comes in until there's one man standing. Geez, it sounds horrific. You know, some guys could be doing, honestly, 20 plus reps with a 160 plus kilo at the stone. And that, to me, it just sounds torture. Absolute torture.
The brainchild this of producer James Ryatt, but... I'm not sure if he wants to let the athletes know that.
It is all James Rowat, folks.
I have to say, having seen it in action, it is extraordinary. You mentioned the crowds before, Eddie, when we were talking about, Leeds, Manchester, that kind of thing. One of the reasons that we're back in Botswana is the best crowds that certainly I've ever seen at a World Strongest Man competition. And that really just adds so much.
Yeah, I genuinely think it was fantastic. The atmosphere out in Botswana was incredible. Last year, we had hundreds of locals turning up, chanting the African tribe, that kind of stuff, and it was fantastic. That really got the athletes going.
Mm. Do you remember that one woman?
I do.
She's unbelievable.
Yeah. Woo!
Colin. Magnus von Magnussen, as we mentioned before, it will be alongside us, adding his expertise through our analysis. And Sarah Jane Crawford joins us too. They're in Botswana. We talked about some of the big names who are going to be there. Brian Shaw, I must mention, the Group 1, which is in the first show of the finals. Shaw and two more of last year's grand finalists, because he's got JF Caron in there with him, and also Matas Belshak. It's not going to be plain sailing, that, perhaps, for Brian. And also, a man we were talking about earlier on, Tom Stoltman, potentially a future champion. He makes his World's Strongest Man debut in Heat 1, Colin.
Yes, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. People normally go to World's Strongest Man just with a hit and hope in their first year. With a guy like Brian Shaw in the group, and that the whole idea of Last Man Standing is actually the man who's first after 5 events, he doesn't have to do it.
Right.
That's his
But
his
everybody
benefit.
Else is still in the mix.
So basically everyone else in the mix for that second qualifying spot. So I'm sure Shaw will be gunning for much harder over the first 5 events to guarantee he doesn't have to go through hell.
All right. Hapthor's coming into Group 2. And in there as well, one of those guys who caused such a stir last year, Martins Lissis. He's certainly not short of confidence.
Last year's World's Strongest Man was a dream come true for me. I don't know if it was because I had braids or like my charming personality, maybe just my good looks. But right after that first event, I was a fan favorite. I felt every time I stepped out there to compete, I felt the energy of the crowd. I was there to destroy, to do what I wanted to do since I was a little kid, made it to the top 10. This year, I absolutely will destroy at another level.
Martins, Lizzie's. It's good to finally have some good-looking athletes, I think, at World's Strongest Man. Eddie?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Does he have a nickname? I mean, Delicious would be the obvious one.
Delicious.
Delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. Delicious.
Sure is.
Is he like that when he's off camera?
Yeah, that is him. He's a very sprightish guy, very energetic, full of laughs. I think he's nicknamed the Dragon. Between us all.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I wonder how he came by that.
Well, he made it up to sound tough.
Okay, yeah, but it does the job.
He's a masked wrestler as well, which is one of those ones where you sort of grab a broomstick and put your feet together and
what?
Try and pull the other guy over. It's a sort of Russian swindle stick or something they call it in Celtic. Very, very old wrestling game. He's world champion.
Oh, he's of Latvian stock.
Absolutely,
of course,
yes.
Martins Lissis. And he backs up all his talk with some tremendous performances. One or two events that he's maybe still working on, but huge potential there. Group three, rather, then another of last year's surprises, Janashia, comes into the picture. Lawrence Charlet's there as well. Also, the first openly gay man to take part in World's Strongest Man, Rob Kearney. Let's hear a little word or two about him.
For anybody, coming out as a gay man is both the most terrifying and exciting time of your life. For me, the most rewarding part was people I didn't even know saying that I gave them the courage to come out, made them feel comfortable in their own skin. It was something I never expected just by proclaiming my love for, you know, my then boyfriend, now fiance.
Will you marry me?
I really don't think I would have achieved this level in this sport had I not done that. You know, coming out and receiving all these messages from guys I looked up to in the sport of strongman for so many years, saying, we don't care, we got your back. You know, strongman's a brotherhood. And to be in the mix of the guys that I have been watching on TV since I was, you know, a six-year-old, and being able to call these guys friends now really is the most amazing thing in the world.
Well, it's not many sports. There's not many disciplines that have openly gay athletes in them. Rugby, of course, but football, certainly, we haven't seen it happen. Not an active player in any of the major leagues. So strongman actually leading the world in diversity here.
Yeah, I mean, I met Rob Kearney out in World's Strongest Man, and a lovely guy. And he's, you know, he's got massive gonads coming out with being gay, openly gay, especially in the strongman world, because it's a very alpha male sport and an alpha male fan base. And as far as I'm aware, he's had no backlash, and, you know, it's a great thing. And as he very rightly said, it's making people feel comfortable in their own skin, which is a very important thing.
Right. Among his many large attributes are his shoulders. He's actually the world log lift champion.
Yeah. He's lifted well over 200 kilograms, but I think he'd be the first to admit it. All the best weren't there the day he won it, so they will be there on April 7th.
What's happening on April 7th?
April 7th at the First Direct Arena, James. I hope you'll be there. It'll be Europe's Strongest Man, but the opening event will be log.
Ooh.
And with MIT guests, yes.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Right, so Rob should be there. Of course, he's in, which group is that? The group three. And it is a tough group, that. They're all chasing, of course, two places, one of which will have to be conquered through.
Let's pick up on something about the Rob thing. You know, the funny thing is, and people always imagine that these strongmen are all sort of overly macho, tough guys. And actually, the higher up, the higher the echelon, the more relaxed and people are very much just who they are.
Mm.
That the size thing is a byproduct of the sport. It doesn't define them in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if you've noticed that. They're not, it's not like being around a sort of group of hard bouncers or something, you know, nightclub doorman. Quite the opposite, actually. Everyone becomes really, it's quite a fraternity. And anything goes, really. People can be who they want.
Well, the only people who understand anything of what you've gone through in terms of your training, what you're going through in terms of the competition, are your fellow strongmen.
Yeah, that's it. You know, you can do nothing but appreciate the next man, especially at the top level. You know, those guys in the final, you can do nothing but respect each other, because you know how hard it's been to get there.
Mm.
You know, it is one of the toughest sports on the planet to train for, and to be top 10 in the world, you can have nothing but respect for the next man.
Yeah. Okay, group four, pretty special lineup there, which includes Kliskovski, who's scary. He's like a machine or something. How do you rate him? He's young for the amount of strength he's got.
Kliskovski, yeah, gee, it's scary. It's scary. He's such a young guy, and he's putting some phenomenal performances out. You know, and again, he's another one I think that could win World's Strongest Man one day. He's got one weakness, and that is deadlift.
Deadlift.
But is that
because of his back? He's been carrying a back injury a while now.
We've heard that he's got some sort of back trouble that's causing him some real issues. But from the sounds of things, he's trying his hardest to get around that, fix it, cure it, whatever. But everything else is phenomenal. His yoke runs are out of this world. Yeah. I've never seen anyone move like so fast with weight.
It's like the T-1000 in the Terminator.
He can just use every sinew of his body, can't he? It's extraordinary. And actually, he found out what his back problem was. Mm. One leg shorter than the other.
Mm.
And can you do anything about that?
Yeah, you can just wear a little built-up sole. And that balances them out. That was what it was.
Right. So he's sorted for this year. Excellent. Also returning in good shape, but Ari Gunnarsson, who's about twice the size that he was last year. How do you do that?
He's a Viking.
It's a Viking.
That skier in the
morning. It is. You know, you come every year and you think of ways to improve yourself. And one of the things I found helped the most was putting weight on. And obviously, Ari has had the same thought process. Obviously, he's training with four.
Right.
And you have to be big to compete with big guys. You can't be 300 pounds and compete with 440 pound men. You've got to be as big as them to beat them, and that's the secret.
And may I just say, the first year he came, last year, he was actually just training in like a local Fitness First on an exercise bike and a few little rubber weights. And he's just a massive guy naturally. So really, him putting weight on is really just him putting weight on for the first time.
Right.
He is a bear of a man. That's just who he is.
You have to train hard. You have to eat hard, Eddie, as well.
Diet's the biggest thing. I mean, people say, oh, I eat like a horse. No, you don't. You have no idea what those guys eat.
What does Eddie Hall eat like? What do you eat, Eddie? When you're in full-on bulking up ahead of a competition, what do you eat?
Huge amounts of food. In the lead-up to this show, it's 12,500 calories a day. No.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Wills.
That's Colin, by the way.
Yeah. huge amounts of food. In the lead-up to all my competitions, I'm on 12,500 calories a day. And it's a pretty disgusting diet. You've got to get huge amounts of fats in, protein and carbs, because you just got to bulk up. You've got to have no sense of your own health. You have got to push the limits. You've got to eat beyond what your fitness is capable. You could eat a huge Sunday dinner, and then you've got to force feed a cheesecake down. And that's every single meal. It's force feeding.
But there's also certain insane science behind it. I mean, I was reading your book, and the litre after litre of Lucozade. And you said you watched your body. This is before, I believe, the deadlift, the day before the deadlift. What was the idea behind that? You drank 7 litres of sugary Lucozade and then watched your body swell
not
and glisten.
Not only that, but you went to a local restaurant and got
ate
them
fat.
And ate fat.
It's, I mean,
weird, isn't it?
Because of my swimming days, I was always taught hydration is key. If you were 1% hydrated, that was it. Your performance would go well and below. And I carried that over into strongman. Luckily, and I'd say the day before the 500 kilo, I honestly drank about 20 bottles of Lucozade, and on the morning, another 10. And you could see on camera from the day before to the day after, I put about a good 6 or 7 kilo of water on.
Mm.
And that was to protect my body for that lift, because it was such a stupid feet of strength. I needed to protect my body, and the only way to do that was to bound myself full of electrolytes and carbs.
Yeah. What did you do to your teeth, though?
Oh, nothing. You just brush your teeth.
You just brush your teeth. It really is that simple. Excellent. All right. There's still a group we haven't mentioned yet. It's the last group, and it features, well, Terry Hollands, who had a rotten time coming back in the 2016 World's Strongest Man after, you know, a grueling year as a Channel 5 presenter. This time around, is he looking better, Colin?
Yes. I mean, you can probably see him on selfies on the internet. He's looking good, Tal. Yes, he's lean, he's mean. He's gone for a bit of a sort of changed direction in his training. And that means he's sort of trying to strip back fat,
right,
become more athletic again as he's getting a bit older. He's always got the natural power, Terry. He's like a dinosaur, isn't he? Massive bones, you know. I remember watching him when we were doing a demonstration in front of the First Direct Arena on a freezing cold morning, and it was a 1,000-pound car. And everyone looked around to each other and went, who's going to lift this thing? And the press all turned up. Still no one had warmed up. There was Benny, there was a few others. And Terry chucked something out of his mouth that he was pulling on. I won't say exactly what it was, kids, but, you know, Tell's famous for it. coughed a couple of times, went, all right then, and just in his normal clothes got into the car, stood up with it and ran. It was hilarious. And then finished it at the end, started laughing. Went, oh, I forgot to put my belt on. And it was like, you just thought, gosh, this guy is something else. So yeah. A strip down Terry is maybe a good idea. Probably all have right. to, it'll be a 6 month, a year process though.
Z has done that strip down thing and he's bulked back up again for the World's Strongest Man finals. And that's going to be interesting to see because, of course, he's looking for that fifth title. Him and Brian both. Wow, five titles. Mm. Only one man has done that?
Mariusz.
Yeah.
Puzan, yes. All indeed. Right.
But is that a realistic... How old is Z now?
Z knows he's going to win it. He told me this. Okay. He told me this secretly. He said, I know I'm going to win it.
All right.
So he's not giving up until he wins it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well...
I once asked him, have you got a deal with the devil? And he smiled and went, no, with God. Which I thought was a great answer.
He's a man of few words.
Yes.
But they're powerful ones.
Yes.
Big Z's got a deal with God. Everybody else has got a deal with Z and with Brian Shaw and with, not least, the two guys who want to break up their 8-year duopoly on the World's Strongest Man title, Hapsel Bjornsson and that man there, Eddie Hall. You can see it all unfold against the dramatic African backdrop of Botswana. Around Christmas time, check local listings. The details, remember, it's prefaced by the magnificent Giants Live series. So just so much to look forward to, as every Christmas, but particularly this Christmas on 5 with Strongman. Colin, thank you so much
for
being with us today.
My pleasure.
Eddie, I can't tell you what an honour to have you with us. And who knows, if you go and win it, maybe we'll hear from you in our next show, which is coming up in a month's time when the dust has all settled. If you'd like to get in touch with us for our next podcast, remember, it's theworldstrongestman.com or on Facebook at The World Strongest Man. Twitter is at World Strongest and Instagram is at The World Strongest Man. And of course, for more of Eddie Hall's story, there's his book available in all good bookshops right now. And indeed, to finish off today, let's leave you with a last little excerpt courtesy of our narrator.
From the moment I took the strain, I knew I had enough power to nail it. My entire body had been quite loose until then, but the moment I started to lift, all the energy came together and it just went boom. You can actually see the bar shudder at this point, and as it's coming up, I'm standing there thinking, I've got this. I've got it. Internally, I was laughing my arse off. Not because I was happy, although I was. Oh no, there was an evil laugh, a laugh that signified my revenge. As I locked out the lift, I remember shouting, "F you," which was directed at every single person who said it couldn't be done. It could be done, but only by one man. The next thing I remember is waking up looking at a massive pool of blood. My blood, apparently. There must have been about a litre of it. As well as it streaming out of my nose, it was coming out my eyes and even my ears. My beard was drenched in it.
The half-ton deadlift, Eddie Hall took it on and he conquered it. Will he do the same with World's Strongest Man 2017? Find out this Christmas on Channel 5.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.